So good morning and welcome to, I believe it's week four of our YU Long Island Community Beit Medrash, featuring Rabbi Daniel Feldman and Professor Smadar Rosenzweig. We have today and then two more weeks to go, so we're really in the middle of the course. I just want to make a couple of announcements and also acknowledge the sponsor for today's shiurim, Gail Elsant, in just a moment. Firstly, I'd like to thank everybody who participated in our Shabbos last week with Dr. Erica Brown at this shul, as well as those of you who came out to the YU dinner on Sunday night in Manhattan, and those of you who supported us philanthropically. It was a tremendous success. Over 500 people were there, and it's an important fundraising event for Yeshiva University. So thank you, everybody who participated. We have three more weeks of this, this set of shiurim, and then in 2 weeks we have Rabbi Leibowitz coming for a lunch and learn at the YU office on December the 20th. That'll be going out soon via email, and I'll have flyers for you next week. I did want to mention that the end of the year is coming up, December 31st, which is an important date for a lot of people for tax reasons. So if you're thinking about your year-end tzedakah, please think no farther than Yeshiva University. And a couple people have mentioned to me in the last week that they have IRAs that they're required to make distributions from by the end of the year. And a couple of my friends in the neighborhood are sending distributions from their IRA qualified charitable distributions. So if you're in the parsha where you have IRAs, have funds that you don't want to recognize as income that you're required to take, I can help with that. So see me at the bank. See, very user-friendly. Okay, and on to today's business. I want to thank Gail Elsant for sponsoring today's shiurim, Gail and Martin Elsant, commemorating the Orsite of her parents, Zygmunt and Celia Epstein, Nachman ben Yitzchak Alevi Alav Shalom, and Tzipa Hena Bas Moshe Meir Aleha Shalom, and tell you a little bit about the Elsant family. Together in Newark, New Jersey, a thriving Jewish community at the time, Mr. and Mrs. Epstein raised a true YU family, sending their three sons to Yeshiva College and one to Einstein, their daughter to Central and Stern College. Numerous grandchildren and now great-grandchildren followed in their footsteps, receiving undergraduate, master's, and doctoral degrees from Revel, Azrieli, and GPAT, and several mismachim from Ritz as well. Their enthusiasm for the schus to visit Eretz Yisrael back in 1962 is conveyed in their personal diary, which remains a family treasure. Currently, half of their grandchildren and more than half of their great-grandchildren reside in Israel, fulfilling the hopes and dreams of past generations. The family is honored to maintain their lifelong connection with YU by sponsoring this week's Community Beit Medrash, bringing YU's high level of Torah learning to the community. It seems appropriate to commemorate the Yahrzeits at a YU event that truly reflects their personal legacy. May the neshamot have an aliyah. Amen. Wishing Gail as well a refuah shleima on her recent procedure, and as well in advance of next week, the other eye. And with that, I'm going to dispense with the formal introduction. We're very fortunate to have Rabbi Feldman with us again this week, Rosh Yeshiva, a Mechaber Sfarim, and a very well-known scholar, Rabbi Feldman.
Thank you so much. Good morning. So, if you see a progression in these topics, last week we were talking about Hachnasas Orchim and about some of the details that we can glean from the Hachnasas Orchim of Avraham Avinu. And we started off by noting that happened in the context of Bikur Cholim, that he was being visited at that time by God himself, and he interrupted that interaction to welcome these guests. And that the Gemara highlights as a way of showing that taking care of people is of such a high priority, even justifies interrupting a meeting with God. So that mitzvah, that meeting represents, is also a lesson. And that idea of Bikur Cholim, that God models the visiting of the sick, is a crucial aspect in itself. So today, we'd like to consider a little bit about what that mitzvah represents. And it's timely in a different sense, because not only are these parshios and bereishis so focused on these concepts, but for those who might be learning Daf Yomi, so this week's Daf Yomi is the first source here, basically Lamed Tes and Mem in the Nedarim. Daf Yomi is learning the Dvarim. So this happens to be one of the major passages where we find the discussion about the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So we'll be drawing on that passage in order to try to understand some of these concepts. So first of all, where does the mitzvah come from, the idea of Bikur Cholim? So we spoke the first week about how chesed as a whole is one general obligation that has at least two major sources. One source is the general idea of Yahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, that we should love others like we do ourselves, and the Rambam understands that that means to do general acts of service to them, and the Rambam also says that the specific categories, like the ones we're talking about, those are rabbinic formulations on top of the broad Torah idea. And the other Torah idea is the halachta bedrachav, that we should imitate God, we should walk in His path, and that's also what this parasha is telling us, that vayera, that one word, signifying God's appearance as an act of Bikur Cholim, that's a part of how we respond by imitating Him. But when it comes to Bikur Cholim, there's also a few more specific references. And it's interesting why there may be references that go beyond the general idea. The Gemara here in Nedarim, this Gemara tells us that there's a remez, there's a hint to the idea of Bikur Cholim in the Torah in a very unusual place. That when the people of Korach were starting up with Moshe Rabbeinu, and ultimately we know they get swallowed up into the earth, and Moshe Rabbeinu predicts that things are not going to go well for them. And the language of the Torah there is that Moshe is saying, if you want to see if I'm right or not, so see, if they live full lives, then I'm not right. But if they die a sudden death, that will be the proof that I am right. And how does he represent that? So the language is, im kipakudas kol ish, that if they live a full life, as like the pakuda. So pakuda means a visit. And the Gemara understands that in the normal course of things, so somebody will live a long life, and then they'll get sick, and people will visit them, and then only then they die. So it's taken for granted that visiting the sick is a part of the normal expectations of life. So does that constitute its own mitzvah? So it could be. Some understand that that's the idea of the Torah reflecting it that way. Others understand that the point is, it's a given that that was always expected, that it was always understood that people visit the sick, and this was taken for granted, so to speak, in that reference. And therefore, that's built into the system. And now, later on, the Torah comes and commands it as a mitzvah. But it was always taken as a practice of the Jewish people that when there are those who are ill, they need to be visited. It's also interesting, the Talmud elsewhere refers to the advice that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to Yisro. That when Moshe gave his advice to Yisro, so we know that he told Yisro to have, Yisro gave advice to Moshe. So when Yisro gave the advice to Moshe, he told him that he should set up a hierarchical court system. But that's not the only thing. That's the most well-known part of the advice. But in addition to that, he said that you should give them the big instructions about life. Tell them about the big values. So how does he say that? So the language of the Torah there is, so this is source 6. And source 6 is Yisro's, we skipped right. We're coming around. It keeps things exciting if we go back and forth. So source, we'll come back to sources 1 and 2, don't worry. But in source 6, so you see that this pasuk is Yisro's advice to Moshe. And he tells them, v'hizharto eshem, eshachukim v'eshatoros. You should tell them about the general rules, the Torah. He's saying that you don't have to get involved in the nitty-gritty details, but you should tell them about the big things. Eshaderech yelchuba, tell them the path that they should walk on. V'eshamasa asher yasun. So what does that mean, eshaderech yelchuba? Tell them the path that they should walk on. So the Talmud, that's source number 7, right under it, from Bava Metzia Daf Lamed, there's also a similar Gemara in Bava Kama. So the Gemara says there, first line, the Tani Rav Yosef, v'hodata lehem, you should tell them, is that beis chayehem, we'll skip that for a second, es haderech, what's the derech? Show them the path. What's the derech? So we could probably guess, right? Because we've been saying, what is v'halachta b'dracha, follow God's path, so as we've been saying, what does that mean? Chesed. Right, so here the Talmud says, "Es haderech zu gmilas chesedim." You should tell them the path. That means tell them chesed. Tell them that's the path they should walk on. And then asher yelchu, that they should walk on. So apparently we're getting even more specific. So it's the general idea of Gemilas Chesadim, but the path that they're walking on, that's coming to include Zeh Bikur Cholim. Bikur Cholim gets a special mention. Why does it get a special mention? We'll come back to that. But it sounds like there are these extra ideas that tell us that Bikur Cholim is a mitzvah. So we have the general concepts of V'yahavta l'reicha kamocha, the general idea of V'halachta b'drachav, and then these specific references in Parshas Korach that the expectation is that when someone gets sick before they die, people will visit. This reference here, to Yisrael's advice, teach them the path, specifically Bikur Cholim. And others point out that Parshas Vayera is itself a source. The fact that God himself models Bikur Cholim, and we know we're supposed to imitate him, that's a highlighted source, particularly identifying Bikur Cholim as a mitzvah. Okay, so far so good. So within that, so having established that this is certainly important, so why is it so important? What are we trying to accomplish? What do we want to do with Bikur Cholim? So the truth is there are a number of different functions. There are a number of different purposes to Bikur Cholim. And they are the topic of discussion in the earlier sources. So if you look at the commentaries that tell us about what Bikur Cholim is meant to accomplish, so there are a number of themes that are identified. There is a comment that appears in a sefer that's hard to find called the Hadar Zakenim. It's a commentary on the Torah of the Rush, one of the great Rishonim. And the Rush notes, commenting over there in Vayera, that if a person is sick and you come to visit them and they're asleep, he writes that you are still in fulfillment of the mitzvah. So why are you in fulfillment of the mitzvah even if the person is not aware that you're there? So the truth is, we'll see later, there are many reasons, but he focuses on one first. He says, because even though they won't actually spend time with you, but they'll be told later that you came. So whoever is with them will say, oh, when you were sleeping, so and so came, and that will give them support. That will give them encouragement, and that's already a mitzvah. So just the awareness that the patient will have that you were there, even if there's no actual interaction, that's already a mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. And it's interesting, there's some that point out that the Ramban is reflecting this idea in two of his writings. So the Ramban wrote many works, and one of them serves as the major template for the laws of Bikur Cholim, because the Ramban actually wrote a sefer called Torah Sa'adam, which is also about Avelus. And he talks about issues surrounding mourning, and together with that, it shouldn't lead, one shouldn't, God forbid, lead to one to the other, but it sometimes does, so he talks about Bikur Cholim in that context also. So there, he lays out certain values that Bikur Cholim is meant to accomplish. And he writes there also, just to be present, to support the person, is a part of the mitzvah. And some later commentaries point out that this is probably l'shitaso, this is consistent with his own opinion, because in his commentary to the Torah, so he writes that when God appears to Avraham Avinu, he is there to encourage him, having performed this difficult mitzvah of Bris Milah. So some ask, he's contradicting the Talmud, because the Talmud says he was there to visit the sick. So others suggest, no, it's not a contradiction, it's the same thing. When you come to encourage someone, when you come to be present, and just to show your support, that is the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So these two comments are really all of a piece. That on the one hand, yes, he was coming to support him having performed this difficult mitzvah, but that itself is Bikur Cholim. When you come and say, I'm here with you, that's a fulfillment of the mitzvah. It's also important to appreciate that, even to go beyond what the Rush says, that even if the person is not going to be told later on that you came. And let's say, Rahman al-Islam, sometimes the person is just not conscious, is not going to be conscious, is not going to be aware, either because of their medical circumstances or because because the person is an infant, let's say, is not going to know that a visit took place. So it's still highly valuable, and we'll say more about this. This is another one of the lessons I learned from my father. It was pointed out that when you come to a hospital and you visit somebody, even if they have no idea that you visited them, but the nurses are aware, and that has a significant impact on how they are attended to. And that is significantly important. And I'll mention a huge detail, halacha lemaisa, 2 years ago, at the beginning of the COVID crisis, when Rav Shechter Shlita was working on some of the halachic issues that were being conveyed to the people who were asking. So, you know, the terrible things that were going on at the time, that people were in hospitals and the families had no access, weren't able to be with them at all. Terrible anguish people were going through. So Rav Shechter recommended that not only should you constantly call the hospital to see how the family member is doing, but you should call on Shabbos also. That you have to call the hospital on Shabbos, because the more they know that the family cares and is involved, that's going to have an impact on their treatment. So it goes so far as to say that you should even make a call on Shabbos. That's considered a part of the pikuach nefesh. That's the level of effect. So when you visit a chola, even if they're not going to be aware, even if there's no possibility of them being aware, but the nurses and the staff see that you're there, and that has a material effect that we factor in terms of how they are attended to. And certainly, I'll give you the question, but certainly also the family that's there, they need support. And that's especially in the case of an infant or anybody, but knowing that people are coming and caring, that has an impact on what they're going through, and that's also very significant.
Hi.
Rav Shechter Shlita said that, yeah, that he recommended, not just aloud.
Does that apply even now after the program is over?
So there was a unique circumstance there that meant that there is definitely applications of it, but what was going on at that time specifically...
No, but I'm talking about now.
Yes, so in general, there are other applications. Right, there are other applications, but there what was going on broadly is that the family members weren't allowed in the hospital.
Know, right?
So being that they couldn't be there physically, so it was important for the staff to know that the family was involved. So the only way to do that was electronically, so that was what was being referenced there. It could certainly come up in other contexts also, but it was particularly acute in that setting. So that's one purpose of Bikur Cholim. Just being there is itself a purpose. But beyond that, so we find more pointed ideas. And what's also noteworthy is that there's a tremendous emphasis on tefillah, and perhaps more than you would expect. In general, there is an idea that the visit is there to benefit the patient. That is intuitive. But the specific type of benefit that we're trying to bring about is of a different type, of a couple of different types. So some of it is spiritual, and some of it is practical, and some of it is emotional. So the idea that you have to be there to daven on behalf of the chola, that's one of the ideas that is brought in the Ramban. And the Ramban, the sefer that we mentioned, Taras HaAdam, so that is something that served as the template, it was said, for the later code. I just noticed, by the way, I thought the source wasn't here. I just want to see source number 9. I said the sefer was hard to find. I see the wonderful people put together the sheets. They did manage to find it. So if you just want to see that source inside, so source 9 was that source I referenced before. Hadar Zakenim. Yeah, it's on the other side. It's on the other side. Yeah. Okay, so the last line there, he says, "Lo nichtav lomer lecha shlo halach lomer shum davar ela kidei l'roso." That he didn't go even to say anything, just that he should be seen, just that he should see him and be encountering his presence. So the ideas of the Ramban, when the Ramban specifies the purposes of Bikur Cholim, so this was incorporated into the Shulchan Aruch and into all of the other codes. And there is a tremendous focus on tefillah, that tefillah is considered incredibly important, so much so that we also find the idea that somebody who visits a chola and doesn't pray on his behalf is not in fulfillment of the mitzvah. And that's hard to understand, because it seems like it's too much. Seems like to say that that's the whole point of the mitzvah. There's got to be other points also. So it's the idea that if somebody travels for a number of hours and then spends hours with the chola and does everything he can to physically assist him, so to say that you're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah, that certainly seems a little strong. It certainly seems like a little much. And some of the later sources do try to soften a little bit, and they say maybe it means you didn't fulfill this mitzvah, you didn't fulfill this component of the mitzvah, but it's hard to escape the idea that there is an extraordinary emphasis on tefillah. And this is the way it is framed at the beginning, source 10. So it says, Masai Mevakrim HaChola, the heading at the top, and how you, when you visit the Chola, and Ezu Chol Mevakrim, what type of conditions demand this kind of attention, and the Chetzad Mispalim Alav, and how do you daven on their behalf. And that idea, that it's so extreme, so if you see towards the bottom of the page, and so there is Sif Dalet. See, it's about four lines from the bottom of the page. There's a little Zion before it. So it says, V'kol she'biker, v'lo bike she'lov rachamim, whoever visits and doesn't pray on their behalf, lo kiyem ha'mitzvah, didn't fulfill the mitzvah. So that sounds so extreme, so some of the later Sfarim soften it a little bit, but it certainly seems like it is front and center in the idea of Bikur Cholim. And a part of it is inspired by this Daf Yomi, this Gemara in Nedarim, that we have at the beginning, that the Gemara has an idea that we don't actually literally put into practice, but the question is, what's the purpose of this particular framing? Now, the Talmud says that you shouldn't visit a chola in the first quarter of the day or the last quarter of the day. You should only do it in the middle half of the day. So, what's that about? Why does that matter? Now, first, we should acknowledge that we don't actually do that today. We don't actually have those restrictions. That could be for a number of reasons. But what's the theme? What's the concept? So some understand, it's the way the Vilna Gaon understands in his commentary, that because there is such a focus on prayer, on davening on behalf of the chola, so you want to make sure that you have somewhat of a realistic picture of how they're doing. And the assumption is that as the course of the day goes on, the illness wears down on the chola, and they get weaker and weaker. So the assumption is that if you come in the first quarter of the day, you'll have an overly optimistic view. And if you come in the last quarter of the day, you'll have an overly pessimistic view. So therefore, you should come in the middle, you'll have the most realistic view of how they're doing. So again, we don't actually do that today in those hourly frames, but one of the lessons that emerges is that it's about praying on their behalf. And there's a very powerful idea about prayer here, because you could say, all right, so I'll pray, why do I need to go? So apparently the assumption is that when you pray, the more you have something concrete in mind, the more powerful that tefillah is. So if you have, as accurate as you can, a sense of what's going on, and you're able to feel it emotionally because you were with them at that time, so then that's going to impact the nature of the tefillah, which is a fascinating idea to think about.
Does this have to be formal tefillah, or is it enough to say, like, you know, I wish you were refuah shleimar, I hope you know, like, does it have to be formal?
So that's a great question. So I want to come back to that in 1 second, just to finish this point, I'll come right back to that. So the question just of having something to visualize and have some kind of a real understanding, it's very interesting, because this has practical ramifications also, and just parenthetically from a different area of halacha, this is what we do Rosh Hashanah night. We have simanim on Rosh Hashanah night at the table, and people sometimes are confused by that because it seems superstitious. So we think we're going to have a sweet year because we had an apple with honey. Rosh Hashanah night, that's how it works. You push that button and all of a sudden you'll have a sweet year. So that's actually a prohibition in the Torah to believe that. You're not allowed to have superstitious beliefs and think that that's how you control things. And this Talmud talks about this already. It's not what we're talking about. It's about being able to visualize something. You're going to be davening on Rosh Hashanah. You're going to have things in mind. You want to have a sweet year. You want to have a prosperous year. You want to have a healthy year. So all these things that help you to focus more on that imagery is all considered to be valuable towards the tefillah. So that's why we have simanim on Rosh Hashanah. And here, in an even more concrete sense, that the more you have a connection with what's actually going on with the chola, so the more you are able to daven on their behalf. So some, I saw once in a sefer, I didn't really think this was correct, that a sefer said, okay, so maybe if somebody commits to pray on behalf of the chola, they shouldn't have to visit. But clearly the assumption is, you see from these sources, that it's not just a question of will you or will you not pray, but it's a question also of the quality of the prayer, and the assumption that that quality is affected by having a more direct exposure. So if it was enough just to commit, then there wouldn't be any importance of actually encountering this in person. So all of that reflects the fact that the tefillah is itself impacted. Now, the question that you raised has a lot of levels to it also, because davening in the presence of the chola specifically is certainly an idea that we do find, and some of it also is reflected in the idea that there's almost a shul-like atmosphere in the presence of the chola. So if we go back to Source 10, this is the Shulchan Aruch. So here you see Sif Gimel. It reflects some of the halachos that are kind of shul-like. So it says, "Hamavaker es lachola lo yeshev al gab mita v'lo al gab kisei v'lo al gab yisafsal elo mesate fiyoshev lefano." So this again is something we don't actually do in practical situations right now. But it says you shouldn't sit on the bed or on the floor or on a couch on a bench, but rather you should wrap yourself up like with a talus and sit in front of him. Shashchina lamayli merosh osav, that the shchina, the divine presence, is there above his head. So the notion that there is some kind of a synagogue-like atmosphere is an idea that you find in a couple of halachos. And so to say, like that suggestion that I didn't think was correct, that if you just commit to praying without going, that should be enough. So certainly you lose this aspect, but also there is a big component that we know about, that when the patient experiences the fact that prayer is happening on their behalf, so that itself helps them. That itself is very significant. So what does that mean practically? So does that mean that you are praying in their presence? That mean that you're davening while you are there? So that takes some judgment. That takes a lot of seichel, because there are certainly patients who will be very inspired and encouraged by seeing that, and there are those who will be very dismayed. Those who will think, oh my gosh, things are so much worse than I thought. They see you come into the room and all of a sudden you start praying. So there needs to be a lot of balance and a lot of common sense to know whether this is going to be helpful or not, whether it should happen in their presence or whether it should happen elsewhere with that extra focus that comes from this. But also, to your points, the Sfarim discussed, and it may actually be also a resolution to this issue, that when you say to somebody, you should have a refuah shleima, so minimally, that is a prayer. Minimally, that is saying, I hope that God will heal you. So one could suggest that that does, on some level, fulfill this component of tefillah. Certainly, in other contexts, presumably you'll have more to add, and you'll say additional supplications. But this phrase in of itself does comprise a tefillah. So saying that to the chola probably is also a safer path. You're not necessarily all of a sudden gathering tehillim in their hospital room, which may indeed make them feel like things are very desperate. But you will also be able to show your concern, and that is technically a tefillah, and in a different context, you'll say more, and you will hope to bring about divine rachamim. So this idea of praying on behalf of the chola is given an unusual focus. It's definitely considered something that is of great importance, and highlighted here as crucial to the whole experience. Now, in addition to that, so the notion that you are helping the chola is there both spiritually and practically. So to be able to help the chola in ways that are more functional, to find out what they need, is also a big part of Bikur Cholim. And many point out that both in Biblical Hebrew and in Talmudical Hebrew, we may need to translate the phrase a little better. So how would you translate Bikur Cholim? What does the phrase mean? So to see, okay, see that may actually be a good bridge translation, because we normally translate it to visit. That's how we understand what it means. But the language of Bikur in the Torah, and also in Mishnaic Hebrew, which is sometimes different, but you find, to examine, right, exactly, to look into, to investigate, which see could be a good bridge between the two, because when you visit someone, you see them, and when you examine, you see. So it was a good choice. But some understand that the purpose of Bikur Cholim means to investigate the situation, not to be nosy, not to pry, but the point is to see how can I help. So to visit, to look into, to see how can I make a difference. Hi.
Can you tie Bikur to Boker, where you're giving like a hopeful like morning?
Oh, it's a nice idea. It's a nice idea. We'll take it. Show some light. The first, we'll take it. So there's definitely anything's possible. So that idea that you are looking into the situation and seeing how you can help is also clearly a part of the mitzvah. And the Aruch HaShulchan is a great code that was written there recently. So Aruch HaShulchan puts all the emphasis on that. And he says that it's obvious to him, this is language, that that's the main purpose of Bikur Cholim, is to come and to look into the situation and to see how can I help, what can I do to make a difference.
Sometimes you don't even have to ask, Sometimes when you visit someone in the hospital and they have a little water thing there, it's empty.
Right.
I mean,
so
I know nurses, 25 years at least, there's a shortage of nurses, and they don't think, and the guy, maybe nobody visited in half hour, and he needs water.
Exactly. So that makes a couple of important points. So there's many... There's many aspects, right? There are many aspects that are hidden in that statement, because first of all, so it's true that what you can figure out without asking is often the greater help, which also puts the emphasis on the visit itself, because there are those who would say, and this is understandable also, that maybe, okay, if that's the purpose, so I don't have to come, so then let me just find out what's going on. Now, sometimes that may be the only practical route. And, for example, the Shulchan Aruch also describes here that there are people who are in a situation where they don't want visitors for any number of reasons, whether it goes to the nature of the circumstance they're dealing with or whether it goes to other things, but they don't want people coming. And the commentaries emphasize, the poskim emphasize, that you shouldn't think that that gets you off the hook, that if a chola says that I don't want anyone coming to visit me, that doesn't mean you're exempt. Now let's clarify what that means. It doesn't mean you should come anyway. That's not what we're saying. But what it does mean is that there are other ways to fulfill the mitzvah. So then you do as much as you can, and you try to find out how you can be helpful, and you certainly try to pray on their behalf. But it's not excuse from the whole concept just because you can't come. But what we are seeing, and as you're pointing out, is that if you do come, so then you may also discern things that they wouldn't have necessarily had to ask about or thought to ask about, and that's a different way that you can be helpful. I saw one in a journal, printed in one of the halachic journals a few years ago, I thought was also, I don't mean to quote everything and disagree with it, but this one that also I thought was an incorrect suggestion, so that once upon a time it was more important to visit the sick because they didn't have hospitals that were staffed as well as they are. But now that they have hospitals with such extensive staff, so they're not going to let you do anything anyway, so it's not as important to actually physically be there. So I wouldn't think that's true at all, because, first of all, like we said before, the staff themselves are going to be encouraged to do more when they see the visitors. And also, as you're pointing out, there are so many things that the staff can't necessarily be on top of, either because they just don't have enough resources or because they're not necessarily as aware. And I think we've all seen the impact that advocacy has on the way hospitals take care of patients. So I would very strongly question that suggestion that was printed in that journal that hospitals means less of a reason to be mevaker cholim. There's very much of a role for those who are not employees at the hospital to have a huge impact on how the patient is treated. So that's certainly a crucial idea. So this notion of finding out what's going on, I mentioned last week also my father's Zichron Levracha and his experiences with Bikur Cholim that he would train me in, and he always would ask about their favorite flavor of ice cream. That was his signature thing, to bring them ice cream, but that's right, to see what they like and to see what's going to gladden their heart and to see how you can make a difference. And some point out that there's maybe a little bit of a philosophical contradiction in what we've been saying in both of the last 2 points, because if we assume, as we started with, that God himself performed Bikur Cholim on Avraham Avinu, so how do either of these last 2 points fit? So we said that Bikur Cholim might be for the sake of praying, or it might be for the sake of finding out what's necessary. So presumably God himself doesn't need to do either of those things. He doesn't need to pray to himself, and he knows everything. So how does that fit with the purpose of Bikur Cholim? So some commentaries suggest that that is the modeling component, that yes, maybe it might be the case that God doesn't actually need to do this, but because V'halachta B'drachav requires us to be sensitive to what God models for us and to try to follow in that path, so the Torah is emphasizing this not because it would have been necessary for God, so to speak, to do it, but so that we can learn the lesson and figure out that these are also the purposes. However, that being said, the Talmud does describe such a thing, because the Talmud says, and this is what we started with the first week, that when God visited Avram and said, how are you doing? So Avram said, I'm miserable, I don't have guests, I want to host people, and that's when the guests showed up, and we spoke that whole first week about the implications of that. So you do find that component, so to speak, of God visiting the Chola and saying, how can I help? What do you need? Okay, here's what you need. Okay, boom, here it is, here are the guests in reaction to that. So there is such a notion that Bikur Cholim does reflect that, and even God himself reflects that. But beyond that question, the point that we started with, that just the presence, just the interaction, is itself certainly first and foremost the mitzvah, so that God does model more directly, and all of that is included in the mitzvah, is included in what he is conveying. Now, together with that, so there is also what happens by the presence, by the interaction, and certainly the companionship, of course, as we probably could have guessed, is huge when that is possible. So we started off describing a scenario where there won't be any possible interaction, and that sometimes is the case, but certainly when there is the possibility of interacting and of being there and spending time with the chola and being able to talk is certainly a huge component to the mitzvah. And we do find that this idea of conversation is highlighted as itself part of the mitzvah. And it's interesting, Rav Shlomo Ibn Gabirol has a poetic formulation of the mitzvos. So he lists them off in a kind of rhyming fashion. So he talks about the mitzvah of staka and the mitzvah of nichum avelim and of bikur cholim all in one shot. And the way he says al hadalim terachem, you should have compassion on the poor, v'al ha'avelim tenachem, and those who are mourning, you should comfort, v'hacholim, what's the next word he says? Tisichem. What does that mean? You should speak to them, you should talk to them, you should have a conversation. That's how he formulates the mitzvah. So that idea that there is a mitzvah specifically of conversation is a fascinating idea, and conversation itself also requires common sense, because there are so many ways to go right and to go wrong with that. So one major example is advice. So sometimes advice is helpful. Sometimes advice could be literally harmful if you give bad advice, for sure. But also sometimes advice is very much unwelcome, and so it's emotionally unhelpful. So to have the common sense of what kind of conversation is going to be effective is also a part of how we relate to this mitzvah, but when it's the right kind of conversation, that is a huge part of it. And it's also fascinating to note that laughter is the best medicine has been adopted by the Reader's Digest as one of their features, but it starts much earlier, and it really comes from the Talmud, because the Gemara says, in a often quoted story, the Gemara talks about how Elio HaNavi once told one of the Amoraim, Reb Broka Choza, was in the public marketplace, and he happened to see Elio HaNavi there, and he asked who in this area has a special reward coming to them in the next world. And Elio HaNavi said, well, that guy, and those two guys. So then he disappeared, so he had to research on his own what was special about these people. So two of the people he asked said, what do you guys do for a living? They said, we're clowns. We're jesters, and we cheer up sad people. So the Talmud identifies that as something that brings one special reward in the next world. And the Rambam, it's interesting, the Rambam, in a perhaps unexpected place, in his medical writings, not in his halachic writings, but the medical writings were translated by Dr. Fred Rosner, where he says there that a big contribution one can make in general to somebody who is not well is to make them laugh, to be able to cheer them up. That has an impact that is very significant and sometimes measurable, and that's also certainly a huge part of what we are trying to accomplish. Now, that idea of measurable is itself something which is a part of the mysterious statements in the Daf Yomi, in this citation at the beginning, this long passage from the Gemara. So there is a line here that says, so this is right before the break between the two sections, which says Talmud Bavli Nedarim Mem Amud Aleph, so four lines before that. So there is a line there.
That's part of 11?
Yeah, part of the first source, source one, but the first paragraph, four lines from the bottom, says, Amar Vacha Bar Chanina Kol Mavakar Chola Notel Echad Mishishim Betzaro. So whoever visits the sick takes 1/60th away of his suffering. So then the Gemara says, okay, we got a great idea. So Imkain, Liolan Shusun Lukme. So let's get 60 people to visit, and that's it. Then we can save a lot on the medical bills. So then the Gemara says, no, it doesn't work that way. It's 1/60th, and then 1/60th of what's left. So it's not as simple as it sounds. But it doesn't sound so simple. So how do you get 1/60th? So first of all, there's a translation question here. Say that, and it's a significant translation question, because you say, notel echad mishishim. So how do you translate that word? So notel means to take. So does it mean you remove, or does it mean you absorb, which is a big difference? So that may be very significant. It's very striking because, now to go back to a source we deliberately left unfinished before, so that Gemara in Bava Metzia, which talks about the advice of Yisro, So we noted that it made special reference to Bikur Cholim. So why did it single out Bikur Cholim? So that's actually because of this. But Bikur Cholim is a special chiddush. So how does it relate? So in the first source, in Nedarim, so this idea that everyone can make an impact on the visit, so the Gemara seems to modify it at first. So it has a line, on the next line after that, you see the phrase, Uber Ben Gilo. Who is it who's able to make this impact? Ben Gilo. So what does that mean to be a Ben Gilo? So that is yet another mysterious phrase. And the Rishonim have different interpretations of Ben Gilo. But the one that's most often quoted, which may not be the most helpful one, is somewhat of a mystical interpretation, that it has to do with the mazel, that's a person who shares the same sign, the same birth time, is going to have a unique connection, and is going to be able to make a difference. However, it's important to appreciate that a lot of the Rishonim have a more down-to-earth kind of interpretation. So some understand that it's not necessarily about some kind of sign. See, if you look on the third page, it's right here in the middle of the sources, but there are quotes from the Ran. The Ran is one of the major commentaries on the Nedarim. So the Ran has the more mystical interpretation here. It's like...
Is that source 3?
It's the middle of source 3, yeah, but it's about 20 lines down from the top. It says, Ben Gilo, Shenolad Hamavaker, B'mazalo Sholchola, that the visitor was born under the same sign, so to speak, as the patients. That's a more mystical kind of interpretation. It's hard to relate to. But if you look at the previous page, almost the exact same place on the page, part of source 2, this is from Rashi and Nedarim, but Rashi and Nedarim wasn't really written by Rashi, it was somebody else writing in his handwriting, but whoever that commentary is. So it says, B'ben Gilo, Bacher Kamoso Ozakein Lozakein. It's a little bit more rationally understandable. I mean, somebody who's of a similar social group, somebody who's young like he is or old like he is, somebody who's in somewhat of a similar kind of social context, so they'll have more of a connection. And the Meiri takes it further, and the Meiri says it means somebody who has a similar temperament. So somebody who's able to interact on common ground and who's able to connect in a way that they're going to have a real interaction, so that is going to be more meaningful. And that is an idea that's quoted in the Shita Mekubetzes. So the Shita Mekubetzes is a collection of views in the Rishonim. So if you look at the first line in source 5, he translates it in that sense. Ubeben Gilo says, who... Sorry that the sources are giving you so much of a workout, but this is on page 5. This is on source 5, but not pages on it. Source 5, right? The first line on source 5. So if it was all in order, it would just be boring. So we don't want to give away everything in advance. So source 5, it says, Ben Gilo, who denotel echad mishishim betzaro? That somebody who's of this category is able to take away 1/60th of the illness. So first, okay, Kolomer Ben Mazalo used that same language under the same sign, but he says, what does that mean? So the way he translates it is, Shehu mitivo imehanagoso. That he has felt the same nature and the same kind of behavior. So somebody who connects, somebody who's able to relate. Why? Az daito sholchola noche himenu. So then the attitudes and the mentality of the chola will be happy with him. Then they'll be pleasant in their company. Umekel mimenu cholav. And that will lighten his burden. That will make things easier. Avalam einu mitivo v'hanago. So if he's not of the same nature, he's not of the same character, they're going to clash, they don't get along so well, then yakotzbo v'yachbetalov cholav. Then he's going to have a hard time. He's going to be unhappy with him. And it's going to make things more difficult. So here again, there's a common sense kind of balance, so we have to know when it's helpful and when it's not, but the right kind of person can be very helpful. So the idea that notel is ambiguous could either mean absorb or take away. So there's a striking passage here in the Gemara above Metzia, which is a little hard to know what to do with, because we've read half of it before, and we left the second half for now, in source 7. So that top line says that Yelchu Zeh Bikur Cholim. So what does that mean? So the next line, the Gemara asks, Yelchu Zeh Bikur Cholim, at the end of the line, Asher Yelchu Zeh Bikur Cholim, Hainu Gemilus Chasadim. That's the same thing. Why are we repeating? We said Chesed is all being conveyed here, and we have another source for Bikur Cholim. Bikur Cholim is part of Chesed. Why do I need both of them? Slo Nitzrucha Elu Ben Gilo. This is to tell us an extra Chiddush, that the Ben Gilo no tel echad mishiushim b'chalio, that he takes 1/60th of the illness away. V'afilu hachi mibayla mezel. gabe, and still we tell you have to go. So the connotation there in that Gemara in Bava Metzia is that there's a danger, that you're absorbing some kind of the illness, and even though it's dangerous, you have to go anyway. Now, how far would you go with that? There's an extensive literature, and the assumption is that if a patient is literally contagious and it's actually going to pose a real physical danger, we wouldn't necessarily recommend physical contact. But the idea that there's some kind of a extension of yourself that's there is very striking. We're wrapping up. But that's actually also to the point. So here we find that there is kind of this tension here to make sure that we have it in the right mix. And there's also another very striking lacha. Go back to again page one. That right before that line about taking away a part of the chola, taking away a part of the sickness. So the Gemara has the idea there that bikur cholim ein lo shir. That's about now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines from the bottom of the first paragraph. There's no measurement to bikur cholim, and the Gemara says samai ein lo shir. What does that mean? There's no measurement. So savra of Yosef lemeimar ein shir lematin schar. That it's infinite reward. There's, you can't measure how much you get for it. Amalei abaye. What the chol mitzvah mi yeshir lematin schar. And what mitzvahs in general, there is a limit. What are you telling me? No, the hatanan habizar mitzvah chalik hamurish. Be careful with all them. El amar abaye, I feel a godol eitz lakatan. That even somebody of high stature comes to visit somebody of lower stature. We don't stand on ceremony. But this next line, Rava amar afilu mea pa'amim bayom. Even 100 times a day, you should visit. So that's a little difficult, because if we're assuming you should be sensitive and aware of the impact that you're having, so how exactly do you do that while visiting 100 times a day? So that's a good question. And this is brought in Shulchan Aruch. So, and it's also brought in Shulchan Aruch that you shouldn't be a burden. So how do you do both? How do you visit and don't be a burden on the chola? So how do you do that with 100 times a day? So I saw an interpretation in a different context that I think you can transfer over to here. That Eliyahu Bakshi Daron used to be the Sephardi chief rabbi of Israel, and he sadly passed away during COVID. But in one of his shuvas, in a totally different context, but we can borrow from there, is the idea of visiting 100 times a day may mean not that you actually visit 100 times a day, but that you visit in such a way that if you did it 100 times, you're still not going to be a burden. That your touch is so gentle, is so soft, that even 100 visits is not going to be a burden. So
value of the visit is
comparable. Exactly, right. And that if you did it 100 times, it would still be well. They'll be happy to see you the 100th time. They'll be happy to see you the 20th time. Because they're not going to see him again. They'll be happy to recognize that you're so such a welcoming, such a welcome presence that it's worth it even 100 times. So here, well, we're going to overlap. There's going to be some next week, God willing, I want to talk about Nichum Avelim, where there's a lot of overlapping ideas. So some of what we didn't get to here, we'll be able to draw on for next week. But just want to mention one more point here, that towards the end of the laws of Bikur Cholim in the Rambam, source 8, so one line before the end, so he describes what to do. He quotes that idea that it's like a visited a shul, that you're wrapped up in your davening. So the second to last line says, Misate fiyoshev lamatim rishosav, you should sit there a little bit below him, umavake sholov rachamim, and you should daven on his behalf, that idea that we saw before. And then he says, v'yotze, you leave. So some ask, where else in Mishneh Torah does the Rambam tell you, here's what you do with the mitzvah, and here's what you do after the mitzvah? So we know that you're eventually going to leave. Why is he telling you what happens afterwards? So the Brisker Rav is quoted, others are quoted as saying that he's understanding here, it's also part of the mitzvah, that understanding when to leave and knowing when it's too much is also part of the mitzvah. So I'm at that point right now, but I'll also just close by noting that, and I think I may be over time with the questions, but I'll just also note that this language that the Baron Rothschild actually quoted, and it was quoted by the Ksav Sofer as having this insight, that the Gemara in Bava Metzia, that in Source 7, that first line, again, that derivation from Yisro, Derech Yelchu Ba. So we just discussed, why do we need a special derivation for Bikur Cholim? Maybe because it's a little bit dangerous. But also, Asher Yelchu, it comes from the word that you shall walk. So why is it specifically that language that is identified together with Bikur Cholim? So Baron Rothschild apparently said, because that's also a part of the mitzvah, you have to sometimes know when to go. So that idea of Yotze Yelchu, so we're at that point right now. But God willing, next week I want to talk about Nicham Avelim, and we'll see there are certain overlapping themes. Again, God willing, God forbid, one shouldn't lead to the other, but there are overlapping themes in the mitzvahs. They both involve visiting someone to comfort them at a difficult time, and we'll be able to draw on some of those themes to further inform these ideas of Bikur Cholim. Should have a week of only good things, no need for any of these issues, and should be only bracha.
Thank you, Rabbi Feldman. Good to see you.
All right.
How was your week?